The dictionary definition of lore is accumulated facts, traditions, or beliefs, knowledge taught or acquired through experience. Well, Maggie Holtzberg finds lore in a tunnel at the Big Dig or atop a church steeple. Maggie is the Massachusetts state folklorist. She's been crisscrossing Massachusetts, recording the sounds of people plying trades, telling stories, carrying on crafts and traditions that have been handed down over generations. Occasionally, Maggie drops by to report on her progress, and she joins me in the studio. Hi, Maggie.
Hi.
By the way, lore is also defined as the space between the eye and the nostril of a snake. I just thought I'd tell you that. But for the purposes of our talk, it is folklore. And what kind are we going to be sampling today?
We're going to be meeting two ship model builders, which ties into the whole maritime history of the state.
Mm-hmm. Who are we going to meet?
We're going to meet a fellow named Pat Farrar first. And the way I met him is often how lore is passed on. He was passed on to me by his son-in-law after I met with the St. Anthony's Feast Committee North End. He pointed out this little storefront and said, here's my father-in-law's shop. And it was a treasure trove in there of ship models. And Pat was working.
Is there a name to the shop? Is this just a street-side shop, or is it a store? Or?
You know, there isn't a name, and that's what I keep coming back to, is that, you know, you just have to open a door and be surprised by what you find. The only clue is a little ship model above the door.
How long has this been going on? I mean, it feels like as long as ships have been arriving at our shores.
Oh, sure, just like doll-making traditions and dollhouses. The making of miniatures is a very old tradition. And often, men on ships had a lot of free time on their hands, and that's probably when a lot of models were begun and made. But as when you walk into Pat's shop, you'll see the detail of work, the fine woodworking skills it takes. He talked about it a little bit.
And I think it's about the toughest hobby there is. You don't find too many in it. Most of the guys that are in it are all old-timers now. And I think it's a dying art. People just don't take it up. Just too hard to do.
I'm picturing almost like, you know, the guy who made Pinocchio sitting in this little shop working. It seems like there's got to be really small details.
Yeah, well, and in fact, when I first saw him, he had one of those jeweler's magnifying pieces on his eyeglasses. So you can imagine the level of detail. Basically, if you picture a plank on the hull, maybe a quarter of an inch wide, it's being nailed down with what they call tree nails, okay? And they're made out of little slivers. Imagine a quarter of a toothpick that's being hammered into, you know, an ebony tree nail being hammered into a boxwood plank.
How did he learn this?
He learned as a young man, pretty much self-taught, but there's a whole guild associated with the Constitution Museum, Ship Model Guild of New England. Then as he joined that sort of community of fellow model builders, and they learn from each other, and he's very interested in passing that knowledge on.
Yeah, in fact, we've been thinking about teaching. I've been thinking about that, you know, during the day. Probably take in 7 to 10, no more than that, because I got plenty of room for them. And I'd rather have some young people, kids, that want to get into hobbies and stay out of trouble. That I'd like to teach.
He should do it, and you know what? Not just for kids. When we mentioned this in the office, there were about 5 guys who said, "Model ships, really? I used to make them, you know?" And it reminded me that I don't think I see a lot of hobby shops, and I don't think I see a lot of this anymore.
I know, and even, you know, in schools, kids are not learning those woodworking skills like they used to.
Well, who else did you meet?
Well, a younger fellow, Mark Sutherland, who is also a ship model builder, but what makes him unusual is the material he's working on. And he talks about how he first got into the craft.
One of the things that actually galvanized and catalyzed my model making is most people are familiar with E.B. White's book, Stuart Little. And there's a wonderful chapter where Stuart goes down to the sailboat pond in Central Park, and he climbs aboard a schooner model and sets out across the pond. And they recently made a movie of this. But I read that, and I was about 11 years old, and it was like, you know, putting the match to the paper or something. And so I started building ship models. I built, you know, plastic airplane models and things like that before that, but I decided this was it, and I started building models in wood.
Stuart Little has inspired many. Where was Mark from?
Mark is in Concord, but has spent all his summers growing up in Nantucket. And there's a connection. Most of his clients now are in Nantucket. What's unusual about him is that he's working in antique whalebone.
Wait a minute, whalebone?
Whalebone.
You're not supposed to do that, right?
Right.
Or is it different if it's antique?
Exactly. This is whalebone that's either washed up or it's been bought by dealers. He pays $35 a pound to buy the material, but he talks about why he likes working in that material.
Well, it's a real unique material. When it's all done up, there's really nothing quite like it in terms of sort of texture and patina. And there's this kind of a sensuousness about it, too. I mean, this is a piece that's kind of polished up. And it's just, you know, it's sort of has this, this cool, hard, smooth feeling in your hand. And it's there's just something about it that's appealing. And also visually, it's unique.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like on the model of the Essex over here on the bench, it's all made out of bone, but I painted the top sides. Yeah,
he's talking about working on a model of the Essex, which is the famous ship that was rammed by the Great White Whale,
right,
and inspired Moby Dick.
How big are we talking? Like off a tabletop, is it 2 inches high or 10 inches?
The Essex that he's working on right now, picture about a foot long.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe 2 or 3 inches wide.
So I imagine being on Nantucket, at this point you could probably bump into people there who are only maybe a generation away from people who used to do this, work with the whalebone.
That's right, and particularly the whalemen, when they were out at sea for months at a time, had a lot of time on their hands.
On the whale ships, they were really quite creative with what they would make out of bone. They would make all kinds of fittings and like belaying pins or tools or, you know, inlaid details. And in fact, my work, I like to think, is really a direct link to those times. In fact, it dawned on me one day that what happens to the bone that I have is the end of a process that began, you know, 150 years ago when this whale was taken out on the Pacific Ocean somewhere and the jawbone found its way back to this country and was, you know, sat in a barn or wherever it ended up, and finally it comes into my hands and I cut it up and make artifacts out of it, ship models or ditty boxes or, you know, whatever or what have you. So it's really kind of the end of the road for something that started a long, long time ago, and it does connect in the same way with the tradition too, because I have worked on a lot of Scrimshaw artifacts, swifts and inlaid boxes and things that the whalers made.
That's kind of a nice reverential thought about the materials that you work with. I have a question. I think I know what a ditty box is. What's a swift?
Well, that's just what I asked him.
A swift is it's a thing they used to wind yarn on. You have a central shaft, and then there's these, they sort of expands, kind of like accordion, but all around, and they would use it for winding yarn. Like when you were spinning, this is what you'd wind the yarn onto. And the sailors would make very elaborate ones that they'd give to their mothers or their sweethearts when they came home.
You know, I shouldn't even assume that I know what a ditty box is. What is a ditty box?
Well, he described it similar. Can you picture a shaker box out of wood that's bent? It's similar to that. It has hinges on it, quite small, and then a latch.
And you put your ditties in it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. You meet the most interesting people, Maggie. And I'm asking, you know, what about you? Here you are. You've got this cool job. We've already established one of the coolest around. But this takes a certain skill that you have. Are you going to try to pass this on to others to do this archiving?
Absolutely, and we actually have an intern working with us right now. But yeah, I think I also try to influence other people that I'm working with to be sensitive to these kinds of issues that we're, and traditions that we're finding.
And to be listening and looking for them. And as a matter of fact, we are going to do a shout-out, a call-out to you guys out there if you have some thoughts about people you think that Maggie might want to meet. But I'm wondering, did you get a response? Have you been getting responses when we...
Yeah, the phone rings as soon as the show is off the air.
Cool.
One tradition that we heard about, I haven't followed up on it yet, but I want to, is English change ringing of tower bells, which is apparently several hundred years old, and it involves up to 8 people tugging on tower bell ropes to some kind of ancient patters.
Get there. You must go record that. We want to hear it. Thanks so much, Maggie.
Thank you.
Maggie Holzberg is the Folk and Traditional Arts Coordinator for the state of Massachusetts. If you know of a tradition you think the Massachusetts Cultural Council might be interested in documenting, call her at 617-727-3668. That's 617-727-3668. Or you can visit our website, here-now.org. That's HERENOW.org. And there will also be contact information for folklorists in Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Connecticut, and Vermont.